The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the sun. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
What's going on? Welcome to Kinnell and Bell on this Thursday. My man Raja is off today, so we'll make do without my guy Raj. We'll probably have a Kinnell and Company of sorts today. Joey's in the control room. He's going to help me out. We got Emery Hunt. He's going to help make some picks for us, NFL and college. And I'm going to put Emery on the spot, too, about the college football playoff discussion. We always get good insight from him on how to make a few bucks over the weekend, but I'm curious to see what he thinks the College Football Selection Committee will do in a couple scenarios. One being, hey, what if Georgia beats LSU in that national SEC championship game? Would they still put them in? And Luka had a night for Dallas, and I'll get Joey's thoughts on that. But I did have some. If you notice anything different about me today, I have no beard. I had a beard for about 3 weeks, and then it just kind of getting itchy. It was getting a little bit irritating, and my wife doesn't like it. I mean, let's be honest. That's the bottom line, why I shaved it. She doesn't like it, so happy wife, happy life. So I'm going to listen to her every single time. But I do look at myself in the mirror today and I see something just different. It's kind of odd, like, whoa, you look different without a beard when I'm looking at myself. I have a question for Joey in the control room because I'm curious to know. I don't know if I've ever seen Joey without a beard. And I'm curious to know like how different he would look. Like, Joey, what do you look like without a beard? When was the last time you had it?
I know exactly. When I fully shaved it, the last time was I was working in Charlotte for the Hornets, and I had an interview at University of Miami to work for Jim Larrañaga, and it turned out that I was just a candidate that he had to bring in. You have to interview a certain amount of people, but he already had his guy picked. He never called me. Nothing to tell me. He just sent like a random email, like, sorry, whatever. And I shaved for that, and after that I was like, well, I thought I deserved that job, so I'm not shaving again, because I got a job with a beard. I didn't get a job without a beard, so yeah. But I would look like I would look probably 10 years younger.
See, that's what my wife sold me on, and that's why she actually taught me. She's like, you look younger without the beard. I kind of think I look younger with the beard, but she said younger, so I'll go with that every time. And we'll see. If I want it back, I'll grow it back. All right, let's move on to some NFL.
Hey, Danny, I know we're about to get into the NFL MVP race, but we got to address the MVP of the day before we get into anything, right? Happy birthday, Danny Kinnell.
Hey, there we
go. Let's drop some confetti. Can we get some confetti for Danny? I mean, come on.
There we go. It is my birthday. Hey, 41.
Did you buy
that? Did
you buy yourself that gift we talked about on the show yesterday?
I am in the market for a gift for myself. As Raja said, if you don't treat yourself, nobody else will. I have actually begun shopping for it, although I don't know if I'll actually get it today. But again, like I said, Joe, yesterday, I'll just combine it because it is probably going to be a larger purchase than I would normally buy for myself. I'll justify it. I'll do it as a Christmas/birthday gift. That's a good part about having a birthday in November. You can always ask for a bigger gift and just say, we'll combine them. And then hopefully whoever you're asking for, they'll forget about it by the time and you'll get a second gift. But yeah, I haven't done it yet, but I'm in the market for it. I'll let you guys know what I do. All right. NFL MVP race. I think it is one of the best races we have seen in the last decade of multiple candidates that run pretty deep. I think you can make a really strong case for about 7 or 8 guys in the NFL that still have a legitimate chance to win the MVP. And that is great. Like, this is great for the NFL. The NFL is having a fantastic season as it pertains to breakout stars. You've got Lamar Jackson, who is probably in the top 2 position there. You got Deshaun Watson falling off a little bit, but he's probably be back in the race. You got Dak Prescott. He's been up, started off 3 games, give him the MVP. Then they lose a few games in a row. Now he's back up there. I think you're going to see that trend continue on the back end of the season. So let's take a look at it. Let's see who we think collectively, Kinnell and Company, who we think can actually win the award as we look at Westgate's latest NFL MVP odds. No surprise to me that Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, are top 1 and 2 and starting to separate themselves from the field at plus 150 and plus 175 respectively, with Dak Prescott coming in there at plus 700, Aaron Rodgers plus 1200, last year's winner Patrick Mahomes coming in at plus 2000, Christian McCaffrey at plus 2000, and then you start seeing a little bit of a drop-off somewhat. Dalvin Cook still at 2000, plus 2000, Deshaun Watson at plus 2000, and then Kirk Cousins plus 4000, same as Jimmy Garoppolo at plus 4000. I think there are some guys you can cross off this list. Christian McCaffrey, as fantastic as he has been, the Carolina Panthers team has fallen off somewhat. And I know it's not Christian McCaffrey's fault, as he has still been as dominant as he's been throughout the entire season when he was getting a lot of love. But, you know, the NFL kind of caught up to Kyle Allen, the quarterback that took over for Cam Newton. And one thing that I do think you have to be on is a playoff team. It's only happened twice in NFL history where you saw an MVP come from a team that did not make the playoffs. I don't think the Carolina Panthers are going to make the playoffs, sitting at 5-5. You got the Vikings at 8-3, who would, you know, shore up the wild card spot there. You've got the Seattle Seahawks. Like, I think the wild card spot is going to be filled by either Seattle or Minnesota. And I don't think the Carolina Panthers are going to win their division with the Saints sitting comfortably in the lead. So that's what I think is going to hurt Christian McCaffrey the most in this discussion, is that he is going to be a victim of his circumstance. The team isn't good, so people are going to forget about – and it might be one of the best seasons we've ever seen put forward by a running back. When you look at totality of rushing the football, catching it, total yards from scrimmage, it's going to be insane. Joey, are you with me that we can pretty much write off Christian McCaffrey from the conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're going to be able to give it to a guy who's not in the playoffs, and they have a long road ahead of them to get back into the playoffs from what I'm seeing. I mean, I think they're going to have to win. They're probably going to have to, I mean, what would they have to go, 9-7, which means they'd have to go 4-1. And even 9-7 might not get him in.
I don't think 9-7 does get him in, because you've already got Seattle at 8-2.
Can you give it, even with the great numbers? I mean, because the guy that actually blew me away in this is Mike. I mean, I was looking. Michael Thomas is also plus 4,000, and his receiving numbers this year are just blowing everyone in the league away. But, I mean, you're not going to give it to him because you have Drew Brees on that team, and he's on a better team. So I'm just like, no, I don't think it can be McCaffrey.
Well, also, Joey, what you have to be is you have to play quarterback. Like, that's the position. It's kind of, and I know we've given it out to other positions before, but if you're going to be a running back or you're going to be a wide receiver and win the most valuable player in the NFL year, you need kind of a couple things to happen. One, you have to do something historically great. You have to break a record. Maybe it's NFL all-time rushing record. If you're a receiver, you'd have to break the touchdown record or receiving yards, something that stands out. And the other thing you have to have is you have to have multiple quarterbacks fall by the wayside. Because if you have a quarterback who's having a really strong season and he separated himself, and maybe he's not having a record-setting season, they're probably, the voters are going to give it to the quarterback every time. It's the most important position of the game. We talk about it the most. They get the most airtime. So I understand that, but that's where I think those types of guys are the, they just don't have a chance. That's why I'm willing to write off Christian McCaffrey at this point.
I also think, Danny, I think also it doesn't help him that Dalvin Cook, while he's not having the same year as McCaffrey, he's not that far behind. Like, the touchdowns he'd have to catch up a little bit from a yardage, total yards from scrimmage. He's like about 100 yards from scrimmage behind McCaffrey right now. If Christian has one bad game and Dalvin has one game where he blows up and 200 total yards and 3 touchdowns, he's right there with McCaffrey. So it kind of hurts both of them. Because if it was just one guy at that position showing out, then maybe. But two guys doing the same thing, probably not.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Dalvin Cook, Joey, because he has a significant problem. His quarterback might win the award, and Kirk Cousins. And I know I have been the biggest Kirk Cousins defender. I've been, Captain Kirk Club, a fan club. I've been the president of that for some time. He is putting together a season, which is his best yet to date. His team is in the playoff mix. He's starting to shed some of the criticism that's been around him. Hey, he can't win in prime time. He's 2-0 in prime time. Can't beat good teams. He's starting to beat teams that are winning teams that are in the playoff hunt. Now, I still think Kirk Cousins, there's some real value there at plus 4,000 if the Minnesota Vikings get hot. But what hurts Dalvin Cook might be the same thing that hurts Kirk Cousins. You got two great players on this team. And their style of play, even this with Kirk Cousins putting up these type of numbers, you know, this team is only going to go far as Dalvin Cook can take them. And I even have my doubts about if something happened to Dalvin Cook or if he gets maintained by a defense, which opposing defenses down the stretch here, they're going to make a much more concerted effort to shut down Dalvin Cook. That's why I still think the value, if you're going to take either Dalvin Cook or Kirk Cousins, it would be on Kirk Cousins, because Dalvin Cook could get shut down. Dalvin Cook getting shut down could actually provide more opportunity for Kirk Cousins to put up bigger numbers in the air. Now, you could question, say, well, could he get that done? That's a worthy question. I think he can, and he would have to do it. But if he does, then all of a sudden he comes to the forefront and he makes a stronger push in the back end of the season. It's been pegged as a two-man race. I would, if it was just the top two favorites, I would say the Russell Wilson has a significant edge over Lamar Jackson in one respect. I think he's going to be more consistent, much like he's been throughout his entire career. I think you could see Lamar Jackson still a little bit up and a little bit down. And if he has those down moments at the wrong time, maybe in a game that's for a division matchup or a game against a quality opponent, as they start getting some more primetime matchups, I think that could hurt Lamar Jackson. Now, the thing Lamar Jackson has going in his favor, newness, it's the shiny new toy. Everybody loves talking about him. Everybody loves watching him play highlight reel run after highlight reel run, whether it's a spin move a couple weeks ago to a move where he's actually showcasing some power, running through defenses now. That's what Lamar Jackson has going for him, is the newness factor. And he's getting better, but I still feel like Lamar Jackson could have a game or two on the back end of their schedule that could hurt him. Now, granted, Russell Wilson could too, but I have more trust and more confidence that Russell Wilson would be more consistently great throughout the back end with the Ravens, who have to go on the road this weekend to LA to take on the Rams. Then they play the 49ers. Then they play the Bills on the road. Like, the next 3 weeks are really going to be a significant test for Lamar Jackson. If he maintains it through the next 3 weeks, he might be able to just go ahead and give himself the award, because his final 3 weeks, he can climb his way back into that with games against the Jets, Browns, and Steelers. It should be really a fascinating one. I'll give you my top four. I think it's Lamar, Russ. Dak Prescott, I think, is still somebody that's been forgotten. I already gave you Kirk Cousins. He's in my four. But Dak Prescott is somebody that's been overlooked somewhat, but he's going to have an opportunity. One, you got the star on your helmet. You're a Dallas Cowboy. That brand goes a long way. You get a lot of airtime nationally. You get a lot of nationally televised game. You start getting right at the right time, which he is the last couple games, playing some of his best football to date. I know he's got the 9 interceptions, which kind of jump out to you, but those were earlier in the season during that three-game skid where they lost to the Saints, Packers, and Jets. So you play a nationally recognized brand, and I do think he would have some people on his side that would say, all right, you know, hey, this guy deserves a contract, one of the lowest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. I think that could actually help him too. But I don't know if I could see him overtaking Russell Wilson. If you had me one guy put all your eggs in one basket, it would be Russell Wilson with Seattle, because I am very bullish on Seattle, not only for him in the MVP race, but also as a team to make a very deep, deep playoff run. And maybe that's because I predicted that in the preseason, and it's hard for me to admit I'm wrong, but I still think the Seahawks are going to have an outstanding finish to the season. Speaking of the quarterback position, there could be some really, really interesting storylines that develop this offseason as it pertains to quarterback movement. We could see a quarterback carousel of some sorts, and we could also see some guys who have been entrenched starters, franchise quarterbacks, on the outside looking in at when it comes to the 2020 NFL season. So there's going to be a bunch of teams that are going to be looking for quarterbacks. Here's some of the quarterbacks who could find themselves. Andy Dalton, he's done in Cincinnati, right? He's already been benched for Ryan Finley. Marcus Mariota, Ryan Tannehill might have stolen that job from him and made a new gig. Phillip Rivers has had two atrocious weeks throwing 7 interceptions. Eli, I don't even know if he's going to look for another job, but if he is, he'd be out there on the market. Mitchell Trubisky, still somewhat in the air. I think it's going to be hard for the Bears to cut ties with their former second overall pick, but he's kind of given them no choice where they might move on. Teddy Bridgewater, going to be free. I think the Saints try to bring him back to convince him to go for the heir apparent to Drew Brees. Cam Newton, now this is a little bit up more in the air because I thought Kyle Allen had stolen his job, and then Kyle Allen has really struggled. So maybe the Carolina Panthers bring him back for one more year. And then Jameis Winston, I think he's done. I think he's kind of made the decision easy for the Bucs as well. So you got, what do we have here? 8 quarterbacks who have been pretty household names as far as it pertains to being a franchise quarterback in the NFL. They're going to be looking for spots. And there's about the same amount of teams looking for spots. But here's the problem. when you look at some of the teams that could be looking for quarterbacks, you got the Miami Dolphins, obviously. They've been tanking. They got Ryan Fitzpatrick. You got the Titans. I think Tannehill might have earned himself the job. The Bengals went to Ryan Philly. I think the Bengals are absolutely drafting a quarterback with the first overall pick. I think it should be Joe Burrow. He's from Ohio. It makes a lot of sense. So that takes off one of these teams off the table as for one of these landing spots, because I don't think they would sign a Cam Newton, or even though he is, does have some odds to go there, or an entrenched starter, because you really want a mentor role for a younger quarterback. The Broncos, who the heck knows what they're going to do with Brandon Allen taking over Joe Flacco. Don't forget they drafted Drew Lock last year, who has been banged up. Maybe he gets to play in the back half of the season. They get to see what he's made of. The Bears are definitely in the market for a quarterback. Maybe they're the ones that bring in – maybe they'd be the team that doesn't draft a quarterback and they bring in a Cam Newton type to go there, maybe even a Teddy Bridgewater. The Panthers, they're in the market for a quarterback. They like Callum, but I don't think they love him. I think they would love to bring in somebody to compete. And the Bucs are wide open. I think the Buccaneers are the one job, that quarterback job, that is wide open there. But when you match these up, eight quarterbacks looking for teams, eight quarterbacks that are in the need for quarterback for a quarterback, but they got draft picks. Some of those are going to be filled with draft choices. So you're going to see some guys looking at potentially no longer being franchise quarterbacks, which there will be some turnover, and that's part of sports. It's what happens. Things would be tough, Bill, for some quarterbacks to swallow when they look around at the market, the landscape, and they find themselves on the outside looking in. Or maybe the best case, but not for them, is competing for a job. Hey, we'll give you a contract. We're not going to pay you the big money. We're going to make you compete, maybe be a mentor, but at least they'll still have a job. Definitely going to be some quarterback movement throughout this season. It'll be an interesting off-season storyline to keep our eyes on.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Welcome back to the show. As we do every single Thursday, we get on our guy Emory Hunt. Does a fantastic job for us breaking down some games, giving us some picks. But Emory, I want to start with a conversation with what you just had, which was the MVP discussion in the NFL. I'm going to give you two guys, and you have... let's say $100. We'll keep a nice round number. $100. You can only place a bet on one of them to win the MVP award. And it's the two favorites right now. Would you put $100 on Lamar Jackson or would you put it on Russell Wilson? Because I think they're both fantastic candidates. I have my hunch who I would put my money on. Who would you put yours on?
I will put my money on Lamar Jackson. And I'll tell you why. Because he's a guy that is doing a lot of unique things. He's doing it on the ground. He's doing it in the air. And I think in the AFC, and it's going to sound weird, he has an easier trek to get that MVP and continue to win games going deeper into the playoffs. Seattle is in a tough situation. You have Green Bay, San Francisco, Dallas. There's a lot of tough teams that could trip up Seattle along the way.
Here's why I went with Russ, because I think, one, I trust him a little bit more. He's got a longer body of work where he's been more consistent. And then because he's going to play against some of those brands and those tougher challenges, I think he'll get better, you know, eyeballs on him. More people will be watching those games and he'll have bigger opportunities to make those big moments in fourth quarters, where I think you're right. Lamar Jackson might have some, especially the last 3 weeks of the season, their schedule gets much easier. In any case, both of them have been more than deserving to this point. It's going to be a fun race to finish out the season. Let's do some picks before I get some of your thoughts on the college football playoffs. Let's start off with the NFL. You have the Colts on the road versus the Texans. Texans kind of, you know, limping into this game after a less than stellar performance against Baltimore last week. Texans are a home point 3.5 point favorite. Who do you like in this one?
Yeah, I'm going to roll with Houston in this ball game, lay the points with the Texans. I do think last week was an anomaly. We've never seen a Deshaun Watson-led team get blown out before. So I think they'll rebound short week. And especially when you look at how banged up the Colts offense is without Marlon Mack, they're going to go with Jonathan Williams. I think he's a good player. But I do like Houston to win this one by at least 4 points.
All right, let's move on to Seattle. We just talked about the road, how tough it is for Russell Wilson back into the season. They got to go across the country and face the Eagles, who are coming off a rough performance against the Patriots, in which they lost that one. The Eagles are a home 1.5-point favorite. Can Russell Wilson get this done, or do you like the Eagles to get back on track?
Take the Seahawks and the points in this one. I agree with you exactly what you said about Russell Wilson and why he should be the MVP. When you look at this Eagles football team, all of their big games, you're talking about against the Patriots, against the Cowboys, against all their big games that they played in this year, they've lost. They've come up small. And so this is another big game, one that Carson Wentz is going to have to rise to the challenge and outduel a guy like Russell Wilson. So I think that won't happen. So take the Seahawks in the points.
Aside from the Baltimore game, the Patriots have been a cover machine. Like, they have just been almost a virtual lock. No matter how many points they were laying, they just seemed to get it done, including last week against Philadelphia. Now they've got the Cowboys going to Foxborough. The Patriots are laying 6.5. I want to say, you know what? Patriots, top of the class. Like, hey, they're there. But yet I see some of their struggles offensively. Like, man, maybe this is the spot to take the dog here in the Cowboys. Which way do you lean?
I lean toward the Cowboys. Take the Cowboys in the points here. I think the offense is going to be the key. You're right about the New England offense. But let's talk about that Dallas offense. They have three receivers, two tight ends, and a tailback. Oh, by the way, a dual-threat quarterback that can give the Patriots problems. So I do see Dallas having enough offense to really challenge New England. Now, defensively, they're fast and athletic, but they don't really get those key stops. So we may see a back-and-forth game, and this could be the game where the Patriots offense gets on the right track, but I don't see it. I think Dallas makes a statement. So take Dallas and the points in this one.
All right. Troy in the college football ranks we move to. Troy is going on the road to Louisiana. Where is Louisiana? Where is it located?
In Lafayette, Louisiana.
But we don't use it in the name anymore. We drop that. So we're past that point. So I am assuming, since you're repping your Raging Cajuns with the sweet red hoodie, you can send one of those down to Fort Lauderdale if you like. I'm assuming, since you're repping them with your hoodie, that you are going to lay the 14 over Troy. Is that what you're going with?
This is a protest to the College Football Playoff Committee and why we're not ranked sixth in the playoff committee. We want Bama. But I do like how the Raging Cajuns are running this football. And because of that offensive line, their run game, I thought last week was the wake-up call against South Alabama. So you can lay these points, these 14 points, with the Raging Cajuns.
I love it. We need to get like a graphic built with Emery's picture. And then in the bottom said, Emery wants Bama. We need to do that somehow. Get Louisiana, make the case for them for the playoff. All right, moving on in the SEC. LSU has been incredible this season. Their defense, I do think, is a liability. They gave up over 600 yards of total offense last week. John Rhys Plumlee, the quarterback for Ole Miss, ran all over them. Then on the flip side, you got Arkansas, is historically bad. They're 2-8. Their coach gets fired. They don't have much left to play for, which means LSU is going to be a 43.5-point favorite in this game. I think the inclination early and say, oh, LSU is going to roll over them and lay the points. But, man, is that a big number. Which way do you lie? Which way are you siding?
Yeah, that's a big number. You saw last week, they're much better than Ole Miss. And Plumlee is a good player. Jerrion Ealy is going to be a fantastic running back for Ole Miss. But you saw how many points they scored. Now, LSU will blow out Arkansas. Don't get me wrong. But they won't blow them out by 44 points. They'll probably win by 35. So, in that case, take Arkansas and the points. Because LSU's defense, you're absolutely right, their liability right now, they tend to go up some big plays on the back end. So I think Arkansas will get a touchdown or two, and LSU will, you know, have this thing going early, and then they'll start to falter a little bit late, but still blow them out, but not by 43.5 points.
All right, let's move to the Ivy League. This is my favorite part about Emery's picks. You get some under-the-radar games. I can't even find Ivy League lines sometimes, but you do have Yale laying 7 against Harvard, one of the oldest rivalries in the history of the sport. Which way are you leaning on this one? Give me some nuggets.
Love the Yale Bulldogs. You'll like this fact that their quarterback, Kurt Rawlins, is one of the best QBs in the FCS. And they also have a good running back in Zane Dudek. What's also underrated about Yale is that they have tremendous defense. Last week, they were a 7-point underdog to Princeton. and they blueprinting out 51-14 or 51-17, something like that. But their defense is a big reason why they can get this win versus Harvard, and also they have the offense to really pull ahead and pull away toward the end.
All right. Those are your picks for the weekend. Nice job on those. Let's air it out a little bit, because we don't have Raja. We say goodbye to you now, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on some things as far as it pertains to the college football playoff, some quarterbacks that are coming up in the draft. Let's start with the college football playoff, because I think you can – I don't know. You can never make the assumption in college football because wackiness unfolds and you see chaos, but I feel pretty good about LSU, Ohio State, and Clemson, which brings us to the fourth spot. Do you think Bama – they're sitting at five, and I think their fans – might be a little bit misled because they think, oh, if Georgia gets beat by LSU, we're going to just pop up a spot. I don't think that's the case. Would you make a case for Alabama if they win out without Tua? Would you make a case for them to be one of the final four teams when it comes time for the selection to be made?
You can definitely make a case for them because of how they played already without Tua. So they play competitive football. They still have a good run game. They have tremendous talent at receiver. Defensively, they're not the Bama defense, but they're still very good. So you can make the case that they are a better football team than Georgia, but I wouldn't discount what Oregon does up front. But now you have to worry about if Herbert can win a big game. I also wouldn't count out Oklahoma, depending on how they do. It's seeing that comeback they had against Baylor and how they can do down the stretch and maybe meet up with Baylor once again. So those teams could get in the way. And also Utah. Utah plays an SEC type game. They run the football. They got great defense, efficient quarterback play from Tyler Huntley, who's one of the more underrated quarterbacks in the country. So Utah, Oregon, and Oklahoma, I think, are the guys that are standing in front of Alabama if all things go how we just talked about according to plan.
You know, you mentioned Tyler Huntley right there. He's putting together a fantastic season. They don't ask him to do a ton, but, man, is he being efficient in the clutch. 13 touchdowns, only one interception on the year. I think you mentioned underrated players. I think he is maybe one of the most underrated players in the country. That Oregon-Utah game, I think, is going to be fascinating. I think the Pac-12 is in a really good spot, assuming they both win their regular season games and face each other as one-loss, you know, division champs for a Pac-12 title. I think the Pac-12 is in good shape. Although, the one thing that concerns me is if Oregon beats Utah, they'd be the Pac-12 champ with one loss. And if Bama goes to Auburn and blows them out. I don't think a field goal, I don't think it gets it done. But if they blow Auburn out with, you know, a significant victory with Mac Jones at quarterback, I think Bama fans and they would be making a push saying, well, hold on a second. Oregon, you played Auburn at a neutral site and you lost. We played them with our backup quarterback and we destroyed them. I think that makes it a really tough decision on the committee. But ultimately, I do think conference champions will resonate, and I think the Pac-12 will get that spot. But, man, that could be fascinating as that unfolds. You do a fantastic job evaluating the quarterbacks as they come out for the draft. You were one of the guys who was promoting and talking up Lamar Jackson. I was, too. We were both on the same page there when he was coming out of Louisville saying, hey, this guy can play, and he's made us both look good. Who would be your number one quarterback coming out in the 2020 NFL draft?
Right now, and this is early, but if I was to say number one quarterback, and I'm looking at how they play versus pressure, how they handle the moment, how they are moving their team down the field, I would be hard-pressed to not take a guy like Jalen Hurts because of how battle-tested he is. You talk about what he went through at Alabama, how he came back and helped save their season in SEC championship game, going to Oklahoma, short notice, spring ball, got that offense under wraps and was able to lead them out on the field this year and doing great things for the Sooners program with Lincoln Riley leading the way. So you're going to have a guy that's battle-tested in two Power 5 programs, have two premier head coaches that's going to sing his praises as a type of person and quarterback he is, and we've seen him be unflappable versus pressure in adverse situations. So I would be hard-pressed to not take a first-round flyer on Jalen Hurts in this draft class.
So I think he's going to be a really interesting case study because he hasn't been getting that much love. And Raja and I actually talked about this yesterday. I thought he might have been a seventh-round pick if he just didn't play. If he would have stayed at Alabama, not really played that much again, and had just graduated and prepared for the draft, I think he probably would have been a sixth or seventh rounder. I think he's played his way into a much higher draft position. I don't think he's going to get picked in the first round. I think one thing that actually might actually hurt him is the fact that he plays at Oklahoma. And at some point, I think teams are going to be like, man, all right, this system is incredible. And I think it's going to really matter what he looks like when he works out in the, you know, how does he throw at his pro day? I hope he does. I hope he rises there. I'll be a little bit more surprised if he gets taken in the first round. Not saying he's not deserving. I just think when you evaluate everything and what the NFL is going to evaluate with him, I wonder if he'll get in the first round. I hope he does. It'd be an incredible story. What about Joe Burrow? He would be my first guy right now before you get into all the, hey, what do they look like in their workout and shorts and all the interview process? Because you mentioned games against pressure. Like what he's done and what he's meant to this LSU team and how accurate he is. I mean, he's going to set the record for completion percentage in the regular season or in college football in one season. He's almost at 79% of his, you know, passes completed. And he doesn't just dink and dunk it around the field. And he's done it against, you know, whatever team it was, whether it was Texas on the road, whether it was Alabama, whether it was all, any team, he has stepped up in a big way. Where do you think you would have Joe Burrow coming out in the draft? What spot? Where would you see him going?
Yeah, he would be like 1A, 1B when you're talking about guys that are unflappable. You go back to last year, how he did it against Auburn in that ball game. So Burrow has that it factor that you want. I know a lot of people question his arm strength, but the ball gets there and you can overcome lack of arm strength per se with great anticipation. I think he anticipates well. His placement is where it needs to be. And he has that moxie. I know people love that word and love to make fun of it, but that's true. He has that about him. And that's a big reason why LSU is looking like they are going to be a national champion this year because of Joe Burrow and what he does against the best competition. To me, I would only trust a guy like Burrow and Hurts. Everyone else, you see a little bit of falter in the big games in those pressure type situations. Burrow and Hurts don't do that. And one more thing about Hurts, his situation reminds me a lot of Dak Prescott. I had the same sentiment about Dak Prescott that you did. When you talk about him leading up to his senior year, it's like, all right, well, he'll be a nice backup quarterback. But then it was in a bowl game against NC State against Jacoby Brissett where you kind of thought, you know, Prescott kind of looks improved. He goes out to the Senior Bowl, which you expect Hurts to do, and do a great job down there, win the MVP, and now we see him doing great things in the NFL. But Burrow, make no mistakes about it. You told me you took Burrow over Hurts. I wouldn't argue one bit because Burrow is a fantastic player. I can care less about, couldn't care any less about arm strength. I love his anticipation and what he does versus pressure, both of the moment versus the defense and also in the situation.
Now, Tua is going to be an interesting case study because he had this devastating injury that we saw that ended his season and most likely his career. Let's just assume he goes into they said the surgery went well, expect a full recovery. What would you do with Tua? Like, where do you think he goes? Is he still a top 10 pick or do you think the injury concerns could potentially hurt him?
I think the concerns have to be at the forefront because you're not just talking about a hip injury. You're talking about two ankle surgeries as well. He's had surgeries and not just where he sprained an ankle and missed a couple of games here or there. We're talking about legit surgeries that kept him out. And that's three right now, two on the ankle and now with a hip. So I would probably not take him in the first round. I would probably, if he's there in the third round, low risk, high reward, yeah, take him then. But you have to consider the injury risk if you're going to invest that type of draft capital and that type of money and expectations in a first-round pick that you don't know is going to last his entire rookie contract.
Emery, good stuff, man. Appreciate the time. Go Raging Cajuns, right? All right, welcome back to Kinnell and Bell. Luka Doncic had a night. He's had a season so far for the Dallas Mavericks following up, just putting an emphatic statement following up his rookie of the year type season he had last year. To where last night, he had a triple-double in just 25 minutes of the game. And it was dominant. It was fun. It was flashy. It was everything you would look for. Everything that people are excited about him, he was doing on the season so far. So he had 35. Let me just give it. 35 points, 11 assists, and 10 rebounds in 25 minutes. That's right. 35 points. He had 22 points in the first quarter. I mean, he came out on fire. And not only this, and I was talking to Joey about this before the show. Joey, did you see the play that I was talking about when we were texting back and forth where he was driving through the lane, he went for the assist and he gave it through the wickets? Like,
yeah.
It looked so effortless. Like, it didn't even look like sometimes you see guys sizing it up and they kind of telegraph it. It was so smooth and understated. Like, that's the most complimentary thing you can say is it looked like it was just natural to him to find an opening to make an assist through the legs of an opponent. Like, it was awesome.
Yeah, you talk about the smoothness. They were talking about who to compare him to on the broadcast. And, like, they said that Rick Carlisle compared him to like 30 guys because there's not just one guy. But I was watching, I'm just like, he's like Steph smoothness right now. Like everything he does is so effortless. Like when Steph was in at his best, every time he shot, you were more surprised when he missed, you know? Like he's like, every time he shoots, it's going in. Every pass he makes is perfect. Everything he does is right. And he's so much bigger than Steph. He's a different player than Steph, but that effortlessness that I saw, like in the way he's been playing the last couple games, that's the way it kind of struck me. Because even when you compare him to, like, he's got a little Harden, but Harden sometimes struggles, and he's got, you know, the skill level, like the LeBron and all that. But, I mean, the effortlessness is what stuck out to me last night, like you said.
So when you look at him in the bigger conversation, because I was watching the game too, and Van Gundy was talking about it, and he was mentioning a conversation he had with the Dallas radio analyst, and he said, you know, hey, is it crazy to say that Luka is one of the best players in the NBA right now? And Van Gundy was like, no, it's not. And then it's like, well, all right, if he's in that conversation, just how high are you willing to go, and where and how long does it take for him to have to be taken seriously in that conversation? So right now he's fourth in the NBA with 29.9 points, almost 30 points a game. He trails James Harden, Giannis, and Bradley Beal, who's quietly having an outstanding season in Washington. Where do you rank him, Joey? Because I think he's definitely top five, and I think this is current players that are actually healthy right now. Because I think you definitely get a boost with KD and Steph Curry being out. Those guys are top five players without argument, maybe top three. So they're gone. You got Harden, you got LeBron, you got Giannis, you know, you got Kyrie. What? Where do you think he falls in that, hey, top five, top seven? Where would you put Luka at this point?
Yeah, it's crazy to even consider that where we were ahead of the season. So I think we talked about it on the show before the season. My top five, and not even including KD, was Kawhi 1, LeBron 2. I think I had Giannis 3, Steph 4, AD 5, and then I think I had Harden 6. Like those are my lock top players in the league. But you make a good, if it's guys that are currently playing, I can't put them ahead of those four guys: LeBron, AD, Kawhi, or Giannis yet.
I included Kyrie in the conversation. Is he better than Kyrie at this point?
Yes.
I think so too.
It's hard to ask me about Kyrie. I've never been a big Kyrie guy. And Kyrie is, if we're just talking about pure scorers, then Kyrie is, Kyrie's in that conversation, just straight up scoring ability. But Luka just does everything Luka does is outside of scoring, probably as a pure scorer, is better. And he's bigger. He's probably a little bit stronger. Maybe not as athletic, but he's better. I probably have trouble putting him ahead of Harden already too. But
well, I wouldn't put him ahead of Harden.
But
I don't
then
think
that's
he's
my
there
top
yet.
Five. It would be right. LeBron, Kawhi, AD, Giannis, and Harden of active players. And then he's somewhere in that next group probably. But yeah, it's the way he's playing right now, it's not absurd to say that he's like approaching that.
I thought too, one of the interesting angles that they were talking about during the broadcast was when you change it, not the who's the top five right now, but sort of that, you know, when we do the GM survey of NBA GMs, who would you build around for the next 5-10 years? Are there many players? Giannis, I think, goes number one easily. Like, he's the number one draft. If you had a draft of current players, would Luka be two then? Because that's another way to look at it, where you look at the completeness of the game, the ability to build around him, his scoring abilities, you know, getting triple doubles. I think, is he the second player you would draft to build around?
Yeah.
That would be a good way, I think, to determine.
I think, yeah, you probably would have to say yes now. And I would go as far as to say, if Giannis's shot doesn't get better and Luka's only, 20, 21, I mean, like, in the next few years, it might be Luka. Like, because Luka has the complete game and he's still a kid. But yeah, I think it would probably be Giannis and Luka at this point. I was trying to think of who, like, AD's still only like 25. So if you think he's past like his injury stuff in the past, maybe
he's had some injuries.
Right.
You know?
If he's past that, maybe. But Luka's probably got to be in the conversation. And also, just to put into context, like what he's doing this season, how impressive it is. To me, the most impressive thing is actually how efficient his scoring has been. Because right now, he's averaging about a 30 point triple double. Right. And that's what Russell Westbrook did the year he won MVP, and that first year he averaged a triple-double. Luka's shooting 49% from the field.
Jeez.
Russ was shooting 42 that year. Now, it's still early in the year, so that'll probably maybe tailor off a little bit, but it won't go down to 42. Like, the way he's scoring the ball is so much more efficient. It's super impressive to see what he's able to do at such a young age, which isn't surprising because he was playing at a super high level before he got to the league. Remember, he was 19 years old. He was the MVP of the EuroLeague, which is the second best league on the planet, and those are grown men. I mean, he was doing it at a high level, so it's not surprising that he's good, but this good this quickly is pretty insane.
Yeah, the MVP odds that are out now, Giannis is the leader at plus 200. James Harden comes in second. LeBron at plus 500. Luka at plus 600. So in the same airspace as LeBron, it's pretty hefty compliment there. And I think he could be a good potential dark horse in the MVP race as well. Ben Simmons, everyone was watching. Anytime you hear a Sixers game, I'm always curious. And Raja and I have talked a lot about this, that Ben Simmons, he worked so much on his three-pointer in the offseason, his shooting ability, that he was going to have to showcase it. Even if you don't make it, you've got to at least show the ability to shoot it and that you're not afraid to shoot it. Well, guess what? Major accomplishment for Ben Simmons. He gets a three-pointer from the corner, no less. Solid stroke from him. He's now 1-for-18 in his career. But you know what they say? The first one, sometimes the hardest. Maybe they'll start dropping. How big do you think this was for Ben Simmons? I'm almost a little bit concerned. It was the same thing when he made one in the preseason. It's the reaction to it doesn't make it easier. It makes it a little bit more like, ugh, like I'm almost getting mocked because everybody's cheering. Crowd goes nuts. Social media, they make a big deal out of it. When it becomes not a big deal that Ben Simmons makes a three, that's when he's past the hump because I think it becomes more of a distraction when everybody makes such a big deal when he makes a three. Are you with me on that?
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. Like, maybe it puts a little more pressure on him. But I know, like you say, you know, the old adage with like shooters is when they're not making shots, seeing it go in any way is a huge boost to your confidence. And I think for him, I think just seeing it go in a game. Plus, that was a contested three. It was a corner three, which is the easiest three in the game. But it was a contested three. I think it's just big. I think it's big. You just see it. It's the same thing that happened in the preseason game that happened in that game. The team, like just for the team, they go nuts to see him make that three. I don't even think he's thinking about the fans. I think you got to love for him as a guy who's supposed to be a leader of the team and one of the best players on the team to see how happy the players are because they know how important it is for their future for him to be that kind of shooter. And I'm pretty sure when I was at home watching this highlight, I heard everybody that works here at CBS Sports HQ, because they're almost all from Philly, collectively yes. Jump out of their seats from their houses when Ben Simmons made this shot, because they are probably this building today is probably the happiest of any building on the planet, including Philly.
That's right. I thought it was because of my birthday. I guess it's not. I guess it's because Ben Simmons made a three.
That too.
Yeah, that too. Welcome back to Kennell and Bell. Before we get to James Wiseman at Memphis, we did want to recap a couple other things that took place last night in the NBA. Kawhi Leonard came back after missing a couple due to injury. So it was the first time him and Paul George played together. Kawhi was okay. Did have a big block to kind of seal the win against my Celtics because I have been very pro-Celtics there. Paul George was 8 of 18 from the field. He had 25, but Kawhi was 7 of 20 from the field, 3 for 10 from behind the three-point line for 17. Joey, you watched this game much more closely than I did. What did you think of the pairing of Paul George and Kawhi? Obviously, it's going to take some time to develop chemistry flow within an offense, but what was your first impression from seeing these two play together?
Yeah, that was my takeaway too, is at least in terms of the duo and how it's going to flow with the offense, it's going to take a little bit to figure out who gets their shots where and their spots. The offense last night was a lot of 1-2 passes and then ISOs. They're running plays for each of those guys to get their shots, which is probably what's going to happen a lot. They didn't look great last night. And to the Celtics' credit, the Celtics' defense looked great. Like you may have made one of the sleeper picks of the year. We'll see how it goes because I don't know how deep they are and how much they can keep. But their defense was great last night. But these two guys, the thing that strikes me is they're just so good. These two guys, and I don't love this roster. I mean, their crunch time lineup was what we thought it was. Oh man, my computer wasn't muted. Their crunch time lineup was Pat Beverly, Lou Williams, and Montrezl Harrell with those two guys. I don't know if that's a championship lineup, to be honest. It just Pat Beverly hit huge crunch time threes. He hit three of them, one in overtime. Lou Will's going to get some of his shots, but they got outscored 52-32 in the paint. They got outscored in second chance points. They got outscored in fast break points. But when you have two of the best players in the NBA, you win.
Yep, makes up a lot of those issues there for sure. Moving on to the NCAA, earlier this season, Memphis had their star player, James Wiseman, was looking into. There were some infractions there that took place when he had taken $11,500 to help him with the move from Penny Hardaway, who is now the coach. This was before Penny Hardaway was the coach. The NCAA was looking into it. They wanted James Wiseman suspended. Memphis said, nope, we're going to still play him. It's the first couple games. And then Penny Hardaway took a very much like, what are you going to do about it approach. And then I think he talked to his attorneys for the school and said, what type of impact could this have over the course of our season? I think they made the smart decision to take James Wiseman off the court and say, all right, let's see what happens. Now, the NCAA took him a little bit of time, but this is quicker than most decisions you get out of the NCAA. They have now ruled that James Wiseman will be suspended for 12 games. He got 9 games, for which is what the NCAA reinstatement guide suggests, and then 3 additional games for Memphis allowing him to play after he was ruled ineligible. Since he sat the last game, he has to sit 11 more. So he'll still be back for the back end of the regular season, which is good news. He does have to donate $11,500, the money which he took, he has to now donate it, which is kind of weird. And Chase Young, the defensive lineman for Ohio State, he asked for a loan. And he paid back the loan, which is why he got 2 games. Now, this wasn't a loan. This was more of a gift. So who are you going to pay back? And so now the NCAA is saying, well, you have to donate this. It doesn't make a lot of sense. A lot of things that the NCAA does do not make any sense whatsoever. This is just the latest example of it, because people are looking at it saying, well, what's the difference in this and a fine? Like, you're essentially saying he has to give money. In the NFL, when you get fined, you donate it to charity, or the team gets to pick who they give the money to. Is that this much different? So then you're fining an amateur athlete who is making no money. It's one thing if you want to punish them, have them sit out games, but then on top of that, you want to essentially fine them by making them donate $11,500, which is going to be hard to come by. I think the optics of that are horrific in a time when the NCAA could have used this as an opportunity to maybe come down a little bit lighter. And even if they stick with just the games, because they do have to enforce a rule book, which has been criticized by many, myself included. So I get that you have to enforce certain policies, but forcing a player to donate money, the optics of that are as bad as it gets for the NCAA, which is yet another reason why they get absolutely eviscerated in the press, in social media, and across the country. And at sometimes they are really, really hard to defend. Le'Veon Bell of the New York Jets came out and tweeted out yesterday. He said, I done had 5, quote, random HGH blood test in 10 weeks. At NFL, I'm not doing another after today. Whatever y'all looking for, it obviously ain't here. And I'm not about to keep allowing y'all to stick me with these bleepity bleep needles. Find the players who really do that HGH BS and get off of me. All right, here's the thing. HGS, you do have to take blood. It is not a urine test, which is all that I had done to go. Thank goodness. I used to get severe stage fright when I was trying to do the urine test. They actually have a guy, they reference him as the pee man or the pee guy, because he actually has to watch you. And you have to drop your drawers to your ankles. You have to pull up your shirt above your chest so they get a full view, so they make sure there are no, implants, anything else, fake body parts that you could use there. It is uncomfortable, to say the least. I think at least the thing with the blood test is that, hey, it is a prick of a needle, but you can give it. There's no other thing there. I do think Le'Veon has a point, though. If you've done it this many times, then what do you keep needing to do it for? Because it would have showed up. If he's had this many conclusive tests, then give the guy a break. Although, when you try to call the NFL out, good luck with that. It is random. Sometimes your number gets called more frequently. I think that's just the luck of the draw, or the unluck of the draw for Le'Veon. But I'm interested to see if he refuses to take another test, the impact it could have. All right. You see the confetti, birthday day. I'm off and running. Enjoy yours. We're back tomorrow with Raja breaking down the weekend's games. Enjoy your day.
New CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost,
everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
how you survive. You make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.